Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 43. In this episode, I interview Rebecca Brian Pan, who I call the diva of coworking. She was a COO of Nextspace, which has 9 locations in the Bay Area and Chicago, and she is now the founder of Covo, which is a unique hybrid coworking space slash cafe slash wine bar model that I think represents potentially the future of the industry. So I'm really excited for you to hear our conversation. This episode is brought to you by the Global Workspace Association. If you are starting a workspace, we are kicking off a series of what we call flight groups to help you avoid making all of the mistakes you'd make trying to do this by yourself. Save time and money while starting your business with our expert guidance. If you'd like more info on how this works, text 44222 and then reply to the text you get back with the phrase flight group, which is all one word, FLIGHTGROUP. And that number was 44222, and then reply to the text you get with the phrase flight group. And this episode is sponsored by One Systems, which provides an end-to-end technology platform for workspaces. Their unique solution simplifies and centralizes the control of all IT systems to allow for a smart workplace, helping IT, HR, accounting, and employee management become more efficient than ever before. And our second sponsor is DaVinci Virtual Office Solutions. Listing your virtual office address and meeting in co-working space with DaVinci includes free global advertising, monthly recurring revenues, an online reservation platform, calendar system integration, and increased variable income. DaVinci also offers live receptionist and live web chat services, which allows you to convert web traffic and generate revenues and be more available to your customers. So now on to our interview. Welcome to the show today. I am here with Rebecca Brian Pan, who I like to refer to as the diva of co-working. I hope she likes that.
The diva of co-working. Oh my gosh.
When I wrote the intro, that was the first inspiration that came to my mind. So I was like, I'm going with this. She is the diva of co-working. So let me tell you why. So she had an idea to start a shared space, and I'll let her go into that if she wants to. But through that process, she became the COO of Nextspace starting in 2010. So she was early in the co-working world and helped to take Nextspace from 1 to 9 locations. So she was the COO and did it all. She created their hiring process, hired people, trained people, managed their operations, created all the things that made that place hum. And that was a really early player and a player of, you know, a lot of scale, especially at the time. She was one of the early members of the League of Extraordinary Coworking Spaces and has been a longtime member of the Global Workspace Association. So she left Nextspace to start her own shared workspace, which is called Covo. So she's the CEO and co-founder of Covo. And I'll kind of let her describe it. We were just talking. I hate to play favorites, especially on the podcast, but it is my favorite co-working space. I'm lucky that it's in my... So I live just south of San Francisco. It's in San Francisco. I was just telling her I can't get there as often as I would like to. But she has combined food, drink, connections, a beautiful design to help people enhance their productivity and well-being and sense of balance. And in my opinion, they are hitting a home run and creating a new model for how I think shared workspace is gonna look. So I'm super excited. Rebecca, thank you for joining me today.
I'm so honored that you asked.
So let's dive in. So you were at Nextspace for a long time and decided, you say, had this inspiration for Covo. Can you talk about kind of how that came together and what your vision was for this hybrid model that you've done, and kind of describe better. I thought I'd let you do it since you probably have sort of the the lingo you like to use to describe kind of how the space works and the hybrid piece of it.
Sure. Although your introduction was so great, I feel like you should just keep talking. The inspiration for Kovo and for doing kind of a layered model of co-working as the kernel, but then wrapping around it this a coffee shop and a wine bar and a food program, as well as a bunch of additional amenities like laundry and dry cleaning, a bike room, a nap room, a shower room, and a lot of events and programming, all came out of this idea that co-working is, it's amazing. I am such a enormous proponent of co-working. I love the idea, or your nickname of the diva of co-working, because I do feel that way sometimes, that I'm just like, rah, rah, co-working. I think it's so valuable and provides such a high level of connection and innovation to the people that are able to participate. But the people that are able to participate are a limited group. It tends to be A, people that can afford it, B, people that have a flexible work-life relationship already. So we were trying to figure out two things. One, was there a way that the value of co-working could be expanded to a wider group of people? And two, could we improve the member experience or the user experience while adding additional revenue streams? Because one thing that co-working has as a vulnerability is the financial model is very, very market dependent. As you know, you get your lease, and maybe it's a 5-year lease, maybe it's a 10-year lease, and you have your model, and then when your lease is up, the market is either in a better position and they want to jack up your rent enormously, or it's in a worse position and you are having trouble paying it anyway because there's a downturn. So having all of your revenue come from membership dues, we felt was too big of a risk. Mm-hmm. So we looked at, okay, can we bring this to more people? And in order to do that, we felt like a ground floor retail environment where people could come in off the street would be a really good feeder and introduction to workspace for people that, you know, maybe they just need a cup of coffee or maybe they just need a Danish or something, but then they see the signage, you know, you can have good kind of window display. And we also felt like it was really important to do hourly co-working, especially if we were able to do a ground floor retail concept. There are a couple of spaces that do this. One near where you live, I think, Hana House in Palo Alto.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's another space called Workshop Cafe in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They're the only two spaces that I've found globally that offer an hourly co-working, and they both do it in a way that is pretty clunky.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly how I describe both of them, not to pick on their experience, but to juxtapose your experience. And you developed that software in-house, right, to manage the hourly co-working?
Yeah.
Or designed it yourself. I don't know if you guys sat down and programmed it, but designed
the
experience.
Not me personally.
Yeah. you walk in. I was telling someone that the other day. I was like, you walk in, you swipe your card, you're just in. When you leave, you swipe it out. And it's so seamless and just, it's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you've actually experienced it. And that was exactly what we were trying to create, and assumed that there was a software platform that would do that. And there just wasn't. We're like, but there's parking garages where you swipe mm-hmm. your card on the way out, in and out. And like, how does this not exist on any sort of tablet? But the only way it exists is with those enormous machines that they have at a parking garage.
Yeah. Okay.
And that did not seem like the kind of entry experience that we wanted for our users. So yes, we developed this this app, which initially we had all sorts of trouble with the swiper. We had all sorts of issues. We haven't started. We're actually going to be selling it once we feel like it is absolutely ready to go, and it is at that point now. So that'll be upcoming, and that's how we feel like a lot of spaces will be able to make use of hourly utilization. But right now, nobody else is doing it very well. So that's been huge. And that becomes a really big feeder for our monthly membership. So it's kind of this big sales funnel that we've been able to do with having the open to the public cafe and tap room, and then having the hourly, and then having the monthly, kind of all under the same, albeit extremely complex, model.
Yeah, I have a bunch of questions about this complexity. I do want to ask about the hourly piece. I was in the there's a co-working Slack group, and I brought up your hourly model, and a bunch of people were like, we think that's crazy. We don't think that works. And it was in the context of, you know, kind of what you were describing about the driver for why you wanted to experiment with that is, you know, I think there's going to be a disruption in terms of the pricing models for co-working, because to your point, it's like you have to be able to utilize a space enough to pay hundreds of dollars a month to join it, because even mm-hmm. the open seating is typically hundreds of dollars a month. And so what if you're not that person? That's not your behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to try it out? Or, you know, there are a lot of reasons why that may just not work for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make that more accessible? And I think that it makes a lot of sense, but people, I think the pushback was the transactional quality of the hourly experience.
Mm-hmm.
What's been your experience with how that's working in that hourly segment?
You know, it's been fascinating to watch the kind of the anthropological flow mm-hmm. of what's happening. We have some users that are in town for a few days or a couple of weeks or just a couple of hours. They find us. It works really well for them. They are sometimes amazing. They are sometimes not amazing. We don't have control over that. And that was one of our worries, but also one of the things that we felt like, if we can really have, you know, give easy, approachable access to this product, it's going to give people the opportunity to interact with more unique people and more with more divergent thinking. Mm-hmm. So we felt like it was a risk, but if we could seed the community with extremely amazing, high caliber folks, that it would mitigate the potential mm-hmm. Downside.
Yep.
And it's been really interesting. San Francisco is home to tons of conferences, and we see the hourly utilization shift just a little bit depending on which conference is in town. This week, RSA, which is a security conference town. And so we have a lot of people come to the space that are a little bit older and a little bit nerdier than maybe our typical more a little bit younger, a little bit more hipstery person. But we've also had, there's other conferences too, where we have, you know, like design conferences where we get people, or like fashion conferences or food conferences. So that's been really interesting, but it only impacts a little bit, which has been fascinating. We actually have a ton of regular hourly users. So there's this whole community of people doing incredible things. We've got a whole team that comes here once a week.
Yeah.
And it's like 10 people. They come here once a week. They love the space. They're great. They drink lots of beer.
Do they work together? Is it like a place for them to meet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do have work. A lot of teams that are disaggregated,
right,
but will come together once a week or a couple of days a week, and come from different parts of the Bay and work out of the space.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the ultimate in flexibility, and right, they may not be, I mean, those, that example, they are an ongoing member of the community, but you also have your dedicated desks and your office members. So you have this core part of the community that's consistent, right? And they're, yep, building relationships, and you kind of have this other flow of energy. I think that's what I love about the space is like, it's just so full of energy because of the traffic that you have coming in and out. And I think that day pass piece really contributes to that. And it's not for everyone, but it's the work environment I work best in. So for me, it's like the great energy place to be.
Yeah. It's not my kind of go-to language to say, oh, the vibe, oh, the energy, mm-hmm, this, you know, it's a little bit, soft. Like I can't quite, I've been actually trying and having a lot of trouble articulating what that is without using the term like, oh, the feel or the vibe, mm-hmm, it's just, or the energy in this space is just so vibrant, but it really is. And it's allowed us to do just some really unique things. Like today we had a mac and cheese pop-up lunch.
Wow.
Which it was awesome. Oh, no. And we're starting to experiment with that.
So you bring in a vendor who's going to kind of do an on-demand themed lunch, and anybody who's there gets to buy some mac and cheese?
Yeah. And this was our first one, but we're going to keep, it was really successful. We're going to keep experimenting with different pop-ups for lunch, different frequencies of having lunch pop-ups. But it was awesome. And they did like 60 or so covers. Wow. People came in, friends came in that don't actually work at Kovo, but have offices, you know, right, within a few blocks of here.
If I'd only known, we would be doing this interview live in person with our bellies full of mac and cheese.
Mine is.
So you, I mean, one of the unique layers of this model is the coffee shop, the wine bar, and the food program. And I think I was probably in the camp of, hey, crazy lady, what are you doing trying to combine all those into one? I, like, strategically, totally buy into the challenge of the pure co-working model and even, you know, a strong mix of offices blended in there, and the idea of different revenue streams and being able to build a business that, you know, doesn't tank as soon as the landlord raises your rent when your lease is up. But how is that going, and kind of what are the biggest surprises for you with trying to combine all of those elements?
I'm going to answer that in a couple of different ways. Overall, it is going really well, and it's really exciting, and we're going to continue it with future locations, which I'll tell you about in a little bit.
Okay.
The things that we had this vision that we were going to be a really central coffee shop to the neighborhood. We're near Mint Plaza and the Blue Bottle that's right there. And we're near Sight Glass, and we're near a lot of coffee shops that are just the shit. Mm-hmm. They're just like packed all day, every day. So we thought we were gonna be that, and we are not. We also thought that we were gonna be a really cool wine bar. And we are not. So those were two things, mm-hmm, that we did our sensitivity analysis to say, we know that we know co-working.
Yep.
We know that we don't know food or beverage. So if our assumptions are totally wrong and we are not an it coffee shop and we are not an, mm-hmm, it bar, is this an endeavor that is still a good one?
Yep.
And found that even even if our assumptions were wrong, we thought the financial model still worked. So we are a really solid coffee shop and getting more and more regulars every week. So that's a piece that I think in the end, and we had projected out 18 months to reach capacity for the coffee shop. I think in the end, we will actually be close to what we anticipated in terms of coffee shop revenue.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of bar revenue, we're just not an it bar. And I'm not sure if that's because we're also a workspace mm-hmm. or because of how we designed it or because of how you see it when you're walking by or because we haven't done that before and I don't really know how to market a bar. For all of those reasons, we are just not a
destination. So you're not like a destination for the bar.
Yeah.
Specifically. Yep.
But what we did learn is that the bar is an incredible event mm-hmm. add-on. And when we have events, the bar does really well.
Yep.
And we have events. It turns out we're an amazing event space.
Yeah.
Which was also
a little bit of a surprise.
Totally yep. anticipated.
Yep. And so early. I mean, I feel like that happened immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I just would note a lot of co-working spaces want to be central event platforms for their community and struggle with finding the demand or charging the prices they want to charge. And so I think that's often a disappointment to co-working shared space operators. And you had the opposite experience, even though the bar was not maybe quite the destination, it's made your event space really attractive.
Yeah, it's definitely helped with the event space a lot. And people love the high ceilings and the mm-hmm. wood, and we've got the AV and we've got the big screens. And the other piece, which I really struggled with at Next Space, was lots of people wanted to use it as event space, but it was really, you couldn't have event space without losing member space.
Yeah.
And it disrupting. Was kind of mm-hmm. disrupting your core membership. And by having the hourly floor and then monthly membership only, member only floors, we actually are able to do both. We do have a little bit of friction with the hourly users who want to work. You know, if we don't have an event, we offer hourly until 9 p.m.
Okay.
And if we do have an event, we still offer hourly until 9 p.m., but we shift people into the meeting rooms.
Oh.
So they can still work, but it's not the same sort of, you know, vaulted ceiling, and it's a little bit more of a condensed
yep.
Experience. So we've had a little bit of friction there with hourly folks, and our answer is, listen, we have a lot of events.
Mm-hmm.
If you really need heads down space until later, we would encourage you to join
right.
as a member. And we can work out a special membership if you're a once a week, or if you're, you know, we're flexible with what we're willing to do to make the space work for people. But it does allow us to have a lot of events as well as support our monthly membership in a way that they can always get their heads down work done.
Yeah, and really quickly, I should have mentioned this at the beginning. So your layout is retail level, and then do you call it a first floor, a second floor?
So we have
main
floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the main floor, which is our hourly and retail
yep.
food and beverage floor. But the members floors are the mezzanine and the lower level.
Yep. And you have conference rooms in the back of the retail level. So your lower level, you know, isn't really impacted by events and anything you need to do to kind of change up the space. So if they have an office or a dedicated desk, then they're on the lower level and they've got their own coffee and can sort of have their privacy and do their thing.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So speaking of design, you did a partnership with West Elm's new workspace line, which I think certainly has an impact on the feel of the space. And then you also did a number of local custom / DIY pieces. I know some of your team put some elbow grease into some of your mm-hmm. space elements, which I actually love because I think it's bold to do when you have sort of the West Elm piece. But I love it because I'm attracted to the West Elm aesthetic, and so it totally works for me. But you don't get the sense that you're walking into a West Elm catalog because you've integrated a number of custom pieces. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the West Elm partnership or approach, and then some of the local pieces that you brought in to mix that up?
Yeah, we met the West Elm folks through, I was interviewed for Huffington Post article by a woman who showcased West Elm Workspace when they first launched at NeoCon in Chicago in 2015, I believe it was, in June. And when I was clicking through some of her other articles, and I found this one, and it linked to West Elm Workspace's website. And I'm looking through this furniture, and I'm just like, this is exactly, this is like my mood board has come to life. And so I asked for an introduction, and that spawned a whole bunch of back and forth of, they were trying to figure out their showrooms, and West Elm felt very strongly that they should have dedicated showrooms. And none of the dealerships in San Francisco paying San Francisco rent were open to doing a dedicated showroom just for mm-hmm. West Elm. Mm-hmm. So they were having trouble opening in this market, even though West Elm's parent company, Williams-Sonoma, is headquartered here. So we got pushed all the way up to the top. We met with the CEO's direct reports, Bud Cope, who's the head of real estate, and Pat, whose last name is escaping me, who is the chief strategy officer for Williams-Sonoma Inc. And this just seemed to make a lot of sense. We told them that we thought they should outfit our entire space for free.
Of course.
And they thought that that made sense.
Oh.
That is not what ended up happening.
Okay.
But we
did. You never know if you don't ask.
Never know if you don't ask. And it did. We were able to figure out a deal that did really work for all of the parties. But we shared your concern of, you know, if we have all Williamson or West Elm Workspace furniture and it is a living showroom, we still need it to be a coffee shop and a bar, and it can't just be, it can't feel showroomy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, it was basically just a negotiation of back and forth, you know, what was important to them. It was important to us to have an eclectic mix, so we were comfortable showcasing all four of their lines of furniture. We didn't feel like we needed to have, you know, only one type of table or only one type of chair. We actually wanted to have lots of different looks and feels. That went with the aesthetic that we were going for originally. So that worked for them. And then, yeah, we did have a number of pieces that we felt like were really important that just weren't a part of their line. And we have a movable wall, which we move every day to take the space from coffee shop, where about 2,000 square feet is open to the public, to open it up to the bar later, where we add another 1,500 square feet of space. So those were pieces that we thought, you know, we need like planter boxes or little pony walls that we can push around. And yeah, Jason.
That's when Jason jumped in. I would like to make planter walls this weekend.
Yeah. And he's like, I feel like we were looking online and they were going to be like $1,800 a piece, and we needed three, and we were really at a like scrappy looking after every penny.
That stage where you've like spent a lot of money and you're just like everything then seems like a big deal.
Yeah. And we're looking at these planter boxes and we're like $1,800 a piece. Jason said, I can make that. I think I can make that. How would you make that? I think I can make that. And he did. He did a great job. And there were a bunch of other projects that were like that. At one point we needed to pass health inspection the little vinyl layer between the wall and the carpet.
Yeah.
We were told that we couldn't have that in the bathrooms. The bathrooms needed that piece to be tile.
Okay.
And that was going to be like $12,000 to tile the bathrooms.
Wow.
And so Dan said, well, a tile cutter is like $75. I think we're laying our own tile. And we learned how to cut tile.
Nice.
It's like a wet tile cutter. We tiled the bathrooms ourselves, and we learned how. There's been
thank
a lot
God for YouTube.
Yeah, thank God for YouTube and for Home Depot and
totally.
And not being complete perfectionists. I think this project would have been hard to get out of the gate if we had been too exacting about exactly precisely what we need everything to look and feel like.
So it's
but fortunately none of us are like that. So we're like, let's get it open.
Totally. So what's been the biggest learning that you will take into your next location?
Oh, that's a good question. There have been so many learnings. One thing that we wanted to do was we thought about buying our property and then decided that to do that, we'd have to raise so much money that we would hardly own any of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So we took out a lease kind of grudgingly.
Yep.
Even though it was 10 years, it's longer than leases that I've taken out in the past when I was with the Next Space. Mm-hmm. But that's something that we are changing for this next space. Hang on for 1 second, Jamie.
Sure.
So that was one piece that we're actually going to be buying the property, with our lead investor, and he's going to be leasing it back to us. So that is something that we're really excited about.
Right. And for an investor, this also makes it easier because he gets a return on the real estate.
Right.
So he's it's a nice model because there are two opportunities for him to win, a little less pressure on the business that's operating on top of it. Not that you won't be another home run, but I like that from an investor perspective. And my guess is this is in a market that is not San Francisco.
No, this is in the, should I tell you?
I mean, yeah, we'd love to have a little dish.
So our second location, assuming we finalize the lease and we are in lease negotiations now, contract negotiations to purchase.
Yep.
Is in St. Louis, Missouri. Wow.
Yeah, that's an interesting market. That's exciting. How was that the choice?
For a bunch of different reasons. One was this is the location that our lead investor felt most strongly about buying in. And his reasoning was a number of things that really make sense for us too, which is it is an up and coming city that hasn't popped yet.
Yeah.
It has the things that we look for, like tech presence, education presence, food and coffee presence. Not just food. Everywhere has food, but like foodie food. And gourmet coffee. And it's really, it's just like Denver was like 2, 3, 4 years ago. So it's on the list of all the, like, there's so many articles now. We started doing our due diligence because initially we were like, oh, St. Louis, I don't know. But it's on so many, like,
up and coming.
So we are really excited, and we found an amazing property that we are, term sheet is done. It's signed. We are in contract, negotiation now. So it's really exciting.
So if the deal gets done, what would be the next open date?
Our goal is to open by the end of the year.
Ooh.
We are still, we're kind of doing parallel paths of continuing. There's still a lot of things that we want to do at the San Francisco location, our unit one location, to continue optimizing and streamlining. I have a vision for how the bar can be a really a lot more hopping bar. So there's like a bunch of things that we want to do and experiment with. But simultaneously, we are starting to look at how to work on this project at the same time. And how much money we need to raise, and the financial model for that, and how we're going to scale and replicate, how often we all need to go out there, who's going to man it, how the kind of org chart levels up.
Yeah, as you start to scale to a different location, that's a whole new challenge.
Yeah. We just had a long board meeting this morning where we went through all sorts of where this location is, what our plan is for the future, what we learned from, you know, everything that we've done so far. And we've only been open for 6 months, but we're in the black, and it is a really, it just feels so good.
Good. I mean, we won't publicly go into the challenges that you've had recently that we were chatting about in our pre-chat. So I told Rebecca it always feels so sunshine and rainbow whenever I'm there, but they've had their share of entrepreneurial challenges in their life. But it's,
oh my God, we've had so many challenges, but it's so much of it is the perspective and just continuing to, like,
well, and the model's working. So that's the key,
the model,
right?
Is
you can sort of keep going through these other things that come up when you say we had this vision and we're tweaking, but overall the model is working really well.
Yeah. And it is, to answer your original question, it is so much more complicated. It's not just a bit more complicated.
like going from one kid to two kid. Yeah, it's not just, it's like exponential.
It is exponential. The benefits are huge because all of the components really enhance one another and enhance the overall experience and make it harder for other people to take the idea and replicate. Yeah. So there's a lot of benefits to it, but it is definitely not for the faint of heart. You need at least as much gumption and resilience as you need for a solo co-working expedition, and way more staff, way more, you know, HR choices and decisions, and it's been amazing. So I'm very happy that we did it and we went for it, but I can't imagine doing it with a less spectacular team. If I didn't have the support of the team that I have, I think I'd be a mess.
Awesome. Okay. So I have a lot more questions, but I think we're going to have to do a part two follow up. Because I think you're going to learn a lot more in the next 6 months, and I'll be excited to hear about your new location and how that unfolds. So we're almost at 40 minutes, so I'm going to wrap us up and say congratulations on your journey to date, and we can't wait to hear about the next phase.
Thanks so much, Jamie.
Awesome. Thanks, Rebecca.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.